We're starting chapter 24 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Sectum Sempra. Exhausted but delighted with his night's work, Harry told Ron and Hermione everything that had happened during the next morning's charms lessons, having first cast the Mufflatio spell upon those nearest him. They were both satisfyingly impressed by the way he had wheedled out the memory out of Slughorn, and positively awed when he told them about Voldemort's Horcruxes and Dumbledore's promise to take Harry along should he find another one. "Wow," said Ron, when Harry finally finished telling them everything. Ron was waving his wand very vaguely in the direction of the ceiling without paying the slightest bit of attention to what he was doing. "Wow, you're actually going with Dumbledore and try to destroy..." "Wow. Ron, you're making it snow," said Hermione patiently, grabbing his wrist and redirecting his wand away from the ceiling, from which, sure enough, large white flakes had started to fall. Lavender Brown, Harry noticed, glared at Hermione from a neighboring table through very red eyes, and Hermione immediately let go of Ron's arm. "Oh, yeah," said Ron, looking down at his shoulders in vague surprise. "Sorry. Looks like we've all got horrible dandruff now." He brushed some of the fake snow off Hermione's shoulder. Lavender burst into tears.
No.
Ron looked immensely guilty and turned his back on her. "We split up," he told Harry out of the corner of his mouth. "Last night, when she saw me coming out of the dormitory with Hermione, obviously she couldn't see you, so she thought it had just been the two of us." "Ah, well," said Harry. "Well, you don't mind it's over, do you?" "No," Ron admitted. "It was pretty bad while she was yelling, but at least I didn't have to finish it." "Coward," said Hermione, though she looked amused. "Well, it was a bad night for romance all around. Ginny and Dean split up too, Harry." Harry thought there was a rather knowing look in her eye as she told him that, but she could not possibly know his insides were suddenly dancing the conga. Keeping his face as immobile and his voice as indifferent as he could, he asked, "How come?" "Oh, something really silly. She was said he was always trying to help her through the portrait hole, like she couldn't climb in herself. They've been a bit rocky for ages." Harry glanced over at Dean on the other side of the classroom. He certainly looked unhappy. "Of course, this puts you in a bit of a dilemma, doesn't it?" said Hermione. "What do you mean?" said Harry quickly. "The Quidditch team," said Hermione, "if Ginny and Dean aren't speaking." Oh yeah, said Harry. "Flitwick," said Ron in a warning tone. The tiny little charms master was bobbing his way toward them, and Hermione was the only one who had managed to turn vinegar into wine. Her glass flask was full of deep crimson liquid, whereas the contents of Harry's and Ron's were still murky brown. "How now, boys," squeaked Professor Flitwick reproachfully. "A little less talk, a little more action. Let me see you try." Together they raised their wands, concentrating with all their might, and pointed them at their flasks. Harry's vinegar turned to ice. Ron's flask exploded. "Yes, for homework," said Professor Flitwick, re-emerging from under the table and pulling shards of glass out of the top of his hat. "Practice." They had one of their rare joint free periods after charms, and walked back to the common room together. Ron seemed to be positively lighthearted about the end of his relationship with Lavender, and Hermione seemed cheery, too, though when asked what she was grinning about, she simply said, "It's a nice day." Neither of them seemed to have noticed that a fierce battle was raging inside Harry's brain. She's Ron's sister. But she's ditched Dean. But she's still Ron's sister. I'm his best mate. That'll make it worse. If I talk to him first, he'd hate you. What if I don't care? He's your best mate. Harry barely noticed that they were climbing through the portrait hole into the sunny common room and only vaguely registered the small group of seventh years clustered together until Hermione cried, "Katie, you're back. Are you okay?" Harry stared. It was indeed Katie Bell, looking completely healthy and surrounded by her jubilant friends. "I'm really well," she said happily. "They let me out of St. Mungo's on Monday. I had a couple of days at home with Mom and Dad, and then came back here this morning. Leanne was just telling me about McLagan in the last match, Harry. Yeah, said Harry. Well, now that you're back and Ron's fit, we'll have a decent chance of thrashing Ravenclaw, which means we could be still in the running for the cup. Listen, Katie. He had to put the question to her at once. His curiosity even drove Ginny temporarily from his brain. Sorry, is that okay? It's really like it's all. He dropped his voice as Kitty's friends started gathering up their things. Apparently they were late for the transfiguration. That necklace, can you remember who gave it to you now? No, said Katie, shaking her head ruefully. Everyone's been asking me, but I haven't got a clue. The last thing I remember is walking into the ladies in the three broomsticks. You definitely went into the bathroom then? Said Hermione. Well, I know I pushed open the door, said Katie, so I suppose whoever imperious to me was just standing behind it. After that, my memory's a blank until about 2 weeks ago in St. Mungo's. Listen, I better go. I wouldn't put it past McGonagall to give me lines, even if it is my first day back. She caught her bag and books. She caught her up her bag and books and hurried after her friends, leaving Harry, Ron, and Hermione to sit down at a window table and ponder what she had told them. So it must have been a girl or a woman who gave Katie the necklace, said Hermione, to be in the ladies' bathroom. Or someone who looked like a girl or a woman, said Harry. Don't forget there was a cauldron full of polyjuice potion at Hogwarts. We know some of it got stolen. In his mind's eye, he watched a parade of crabs and goyles prance past, all transformed into girls. I think I'm going to take another swig of Felix, said Harry, and have a go at the Room of Requirement again. That would be a complete waste of potion, said Hermione flatly, putting down the copy of Spellman's Syllabary she had just taken out of her bag. Luck can only get you so far, Harry. The situation with Slughorn was different. You had the ability to persuade him. You just needed to tweak the circumstances a bit. Luck isn't enough to get you through a powerful enchantment, though. Don't go wasting the rest of that potion. You'll need all the luck you can if Dumbledore takes you along with him. She dropped her voice to a whisper. Couldn't we make some more? Ron asked Harry, ignoring Hermione. It'd be great to have a stock of it. Have a look in the book. Harry pulled his copy of Advanced Potion Making out of his bag and looked up Felix Felices. Blimey, it's seriously complicated, he said, running an eye down the list of ingredients. And it takes about 6 months. You've got to let it stew. Typical, said Ron. Harry was about to put away his book again when he noticed the corner of a page folded down. Turning to it, he saw the Sectum Sempra spell captioned for enemies that he had marked a few weeks previously. He had still not found out what it did, mainly because he did not want to test it around Hermione, but he was considering trying it out on McLagan next time he came up behind him unawares. The only person behind him who was not particularly pleased to see Katie Bell at school was Dean Thomas, because he would no longer be required to fill her place as chaser. He took the blow stoically enough when Harry told him, merely grunting and shrugging. But Harry had the distinct feeling as he walked away that Dean and Seamus were muttering mutinously behind his back. The following fortnight saw the best Quidditch practices Harry had known as captain. His team was so pleased to be rid of McGonagall, so glad to have Katie back at last, they were flying extremely well. Ginny did not seem at all upset about the breakup with Dean. On the contrary, she was the life and soul of the team. her imitations of Ron anxiously bobbing up and down in front of the goalpost as the quaffle sped toward him, or of Harry bellowing orders at McGlagan being knocked out cold, kept them all highly amused. Harry, laughing with the others, was glad to have an innocent reason to look at Ginny. He had received several more bludger injuries during practice because he had not been keeping his eyes on the snitch. The battle still raged inside his head. Ginny or Ron? Sometimes he thought that the post-lavender Ron might not mind too much if he asked Ginny out. But then he remembered Ron's expression when he had seen her kissing Dean, and was sure Ron would consider it base treachery if Harry so much as held her hand. Yet, Harry could not help himself talking to Ginny, laughing with her, walking back from practice with her, however much his conscience ached. He found himself wondering how best to get her on her own. It would have been ideal if Slughorn had given another of his little parties, for Ron would not be around, but unfortunately Slughorn seemed to have given them up. Once or twice, Harry considered asking Hermione's help, but he did not think he could stand seeing the smug look on her face. He thought he caught it sometime when Hermione spotted him staring at Ginny, laughing at her jokes. And if to complicate matters, he had the nagging worry that if he didn't do it, somebody else was sure to ask Ginny out soon. He and Ron were at least agreed on the fact that she was too popular for her own good. All in all, the temptation to take another gulp of Felix Salicis was becoming stronger by the day, for surely this was a case, as Hermione put it, of tweaking the circumstances. The balmy days slid gently through May, and Ron seemed to be there at Harry's shoulder every time he saw Ginny. Harry found himself longing for a stroke of luck that would somehow cause Ron to realize that nothing would make him happier than his best friend and his sister falling for each other, and leave them alone together for longer than a few seconds. There seemed no chance of either while the final Quidditch game of the season was looming. Ron wanted to talk tactics with Harry all the time, and had little thought for anything else. Ron was not unique in this respect. Interest in the Gryffindor-Ravenclaw game was running extremely high throughout the school, for the match would decide the championship, which was still wide open. If Gryffindor beat Ravenclaw by a margin of 300 points, a tall order, and yet Harry had never known his team to fly better, then they would win the championship. If they won by less than 300 points, they would come second to Ravenclaw. If they lost by 100 points, they would be third behind Hufflepuff. And if they lost by more than 100, they would be in fourth place, and nobody, Harry thought, would ever, ever let him forget that it had been he who had captained Gryffindor to their first bottom-of-the-table defeat in 2 centuries. The run-up to this crucial match had all the usual features, members of rival houses attempting to intimidate opposing teams in the corridors, unpleasant chants about individual players being rehearsed loudly as they passed. The team members themselves, either swaggering around, enjoying all the attention, whilst dashing to the bathroom between classes to throw up. Somehow, the game had become inextricably linked in Harry's mind with success or failure in his plans for Ginny. He could not help feeling that if they won by more than 300 points, the scenes of euphoria and a nice loud after-match party might be just as good as a hearty swig of Felix Felicis. In the midst of all his preoccupations, Harry had not forgotten his other ambition: finding out what Malfoy was up to in the Room of Requirement. He was still checking the Marauder's map, and as he was unable to locate Malfoy on it, deduced that Malfoy was still spending plenty of time within the room. Although Harry was losing hope that he would ever succeed in getting inside the Room of Requirement, he attempted it whenever he was in the vicinity, but no matter how he reworded his request, the wall... remained firmly doorless. A few days before the match against Ravenclaw, Harry found himself walking down to dinner alone from the common room, Ron having rushed off to a nearby bathroom to throw up yet again, and Hermione having dashed off to see Professor Vector about a mistake she thought she might have made in her last arithmetic essay. More out of habit than anything, Harry made his usual detour along the 7th floor corridor, checking the Marauder's map as he went. For a moment, he could not find Malfoy anywhere and assumed he must be inside the Room of Requirement again, but then he saw Malfoy's tiny labeled dot standing in a boys' bathroom on the floor below, accompanied, not by Crabbe or Goyle, but by Moaning Myrtle. Harry only stopped staring at this unlikely coupling when he walked right into a suit of armor. The loud crash brought him out of his reverie, hurrying from the scene West Filch turned up as he dashed down the marble staircase and along the passageway below. Outside the bathroom, he pressed his ear against the door. He could not hear anything. He very quietly pushed the door open. Draco Malfoy was standing with his back to the door, his hands clutching either side of the sink, his white blonde hair bowed. "Don't," cried moaning Myrtle's voice from one of the cubicles. "Don't. Tell me what's wrong. I can help you." "No one can help me," said Malfoy. His whole body was shaking. "I can't do it. I can't. It won't work. And unless I do it soon, he says he'll kill me." Harry realized with a shock so huge it seemed to root him on the spot that Malfoy was crying, actually crying, tears streaming down his pale face into the grimy basin. Malfoy gasped and gulped, and then with a great shudder he looked up into the cracked mirror and saw Harry staring at him over his shoulder. Malfoy wheeled around, drawing his wand instinctively. Harry pulled out his own. Malfoy's hex missed Harry by inches, shattering the lamp on the wall beside him. Harry threw himself sideways and thought of a corpus and flicked his wand, but Malfoy blocked the chinks and raised his wand for another. "No, stop it," squealed moaning Myrtle, her voice echoing loudly around the tiled room. "Stop, stop." There was a loud bang, and the bin behind Harry exploded. Harry attempted a leg locker curse that backfired off the wall behind Malfoy's ear and smashed the cistern beneath moaning Myrtle, who screamed loudly. Water poured everywhere, and Harry slipped as Malfoy, his face contorted, cried, "Crucio!" "Sectum sempra," bellowed Harry from the floor, waving his wand wildly. Blood spurted from Malfoy's face and chest as though he'd been slashed with an invisible sword. He staggered backward and collapsed onto the waterlogged floor with a great splash, his wand falling from his limp right hand. "No," gasped Harry. Slipping and staggering, Harry got to his feet and plunged toward Malfoy, whose face was now shining scarlet, his white hands scrabbling at his blood-soaked chest. "No, I didn't." Harry did not know what he was saying. He fell to his knees beside Malfoy, who was shaking uncontrollably in a pool of his own blood. Moaning Myrtle let out a deafening scream. "Murder! Murder in the bathroom! Murder!" The door banged open behind Harry, and he looked up, terrified. Snape had burst into the room, his face livid. Pushing Harry roughly aside, he knelt over Malfoy, drew his wand, and traced it over the deep wounds Harry's curse had made, muttering an incantation that sounded almost like a song. The flow of blood seemed to ease. Snape wiped the residue from Malfoy's face and repeated his spell. Now the wounds seemed to be knitting. Harry was watching, horrified by what he had done, barely aware that he too was soaked in blood and water. Moaning Myrtle was still sobbing and wailing overhead. When Snape had performed his counter-curse for the third time, he half-lifted Malfoy into a standing position. "You need the hospital wing. There may be a certain amount of scarring, but if you take a Dittany immediately, you might even avoid that. Come." He supported Malfoy across the bathroom, turning at the door to say, in a voice of cold fury, "And you, Potter, you wait here for me." It did not occur to Harry for a second to disobey. He stood up slowly, shaking, and looked down at the wet floor. There were bloodstains floating like crimson flowers across its surface. He could not even find it in himself to tell Moaning Myrtle to be quiet, as she continued to wail and sob with increasingly evident enjoyment. Snape returned 10 minutes later. He stepped into the bathroom and closed the door behind him. "Go," he said to Myrtle, and she swooped back into her toilet at once, leaving a ringing silence behind her. "I didn't mean it to happen," said Harry at once. His voice echoed in the cold, watery space. "I didn't know what that spell did." But Snape apparently ignored it. "Apparently I underestimated you, Potter," he said quietly. "Who would have thought you knew such dark magic? Who taught you that spell?" I read it somewhere." "Where?" "It was a library book," Harry invented wildly. "I can't remember what it was called." Liar, said Snape. Harry's throat went dry. He knew what Snape was going to do, and he had never been able to prevent it. The bathroom seemed to shimmer before his eyes. He struggled to block out all thought, but try as he might, the Half-Blood Prince's copy of Advanced Potion Making swam hazily to the forefront of his mind. And then he was staring at Snape again in the midst of this wrecked, soaked bathroom. He stared into Snape's black eyes, hoping against hope that Snape had not seen what he feared, but... Bring me your school bag, said Snape softly. And all of your school books, all of them. Bring them here to me now. There was no point in arguing. Harry turned at once and splashed out of the bathroom. Once in the corridor, he broke into a run toward Gryffindor Tower. Most people were walking the other way. They gaped at him, drenched in water and blood. He answered none of their questions fired at him as he ran past. He felt stunned. It was as though a beloved pet had turned suddenly savage. What had the prince been thinking to copy such a spell into his book? And what would happen when Snape saw it? Would he tell Slughorn? Harry's stomach churned. How Harry had been achieving such good results in potions all year. Would he confiscate or destroy the book that had taught Harry so much?
Yeah.
The book that had become a kind of guide or friend. Harry could not let it happen.